Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. And coming to you live from the snuggery where Upstu's. Nicole got me all flustered about the nude beach. Coming to you live from Upstairs Studio in the snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico with me, Nicole Halton, in the wilds of suburban Australia. How you doing, Nicole? You went to a nude beach.
No, I didn't go to a nude beach. That's what I said. It's nowhere near as exciting as it sounds. I was traveling for work over the last couple of days, and where I was staying was in like this really nice resort just near the beach. And so I had a bit of time to spare between kind of travel and starting my training session and whatever. So I thought I'll go for a little walk on the beach. And so I moseyed down. It's this nice quiet beach. There's a few families around and whatever. I had some time at the beach. As I'm walking back up, this young guy starts sort of jogging towards me. And he was probably only about 20, 21, like quite young. And as he's jogging towards me, he started to smile. And I thought, I'll do the polite thing. I say, hello, how are you going? And he said, oh, good. Are you a local? And I said, oh, no, sorry, I'm not. I said, so I probably won't be able to help with whatever you need to know. And he goes, oh, that's okay. I'm just looking for the nude beach. And I'm like, I can't help you. I know nothing. And I was out of there. That was it. So I told you, it's not as exciting as it sounds, but I don't think I've ever been asked where a nude beach is before. And I'm not sure what part of me said, I know where there's a nude beach. Like what part of me gives that signal?
Were you wearing clothes?
I was closed. Okay. I was closed. I knew that's where you were going. I was closed.
If I was asked, I would have just pointed at the beach and said, right there, brother. And
enjoy.
Yeah, have a good time. Almost went to a nude beach once.
Almost intentionally or accidentally?
Intentionally. Tasha and I were, it was on the big island in Hawaii. And we're like, okay, we'll go check this out. And then we saw something in the parking lot that made us decide to go someplace else. So we didn't.
Fair enough.
Okay, so we got the nude beach story off of the list. I got a couple other things before we get into our topic of breakable stuff. Nicole, you don't know this because because I haven't told you. Also the episode where I talk about it hasn't been released yet, but we recently adopted a new pet. I have a new pet lemon tree. And I posted over at the Playhaven site a poll to try to collect names because you never know what to name a lemon tree. And we were going with a bunch of, we came up with some lemon-based names that we thought were going to work. And then I found out my lemon tree's got spikes on it because apparently lemon trees try to protect themselves by growing thorny, spiky things.
Yeah.
And I thought spike might be a good name for a lemon tree. And so we batted that around for a couple of days. But then the other day, Tasha and I were headed out for a morning beach walk and we're walking by the unnamed lemon tree. And I said, maybe we should name her Peaches. And Tasha bent over laughing at the idea of a lemon tree named Peaches. And so the lemon tree's name is Peaches now. Because
fantastic.
That's mildly humorous because it doesn't grow peaches, it's gonna grow lemons.
You should have called it like marg. Aren't they good for margaritas?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
Kind of a more of a lime thing.
What's lemon? What has lemon in it then?
Lemonade.
Okay, you could have called it that. That's
So
not exciting.
peaches,
Okay, go with
peaches,
peaches.
peaches, her first flower. She's got one flower. It
Oh.
opened. It's so pretty. She's just a baby. Look, listeners, unless Peaches dies, unless I mistreat her and she dies, you've got years and years of lemon tree talk coming to you. So that's exciting. Another thing we got to get
Fantastic.
into is we got to do an electric bike update. How long ago was it ago that I gave you shit about having an electric bike?
I feel like it's about 8 months. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been close to a year or
I
something.
had my bike for a while, yeah.
Yeah, so Nicole got an electric. Did I rant about electric bikes before you told me you had one, or?
I think I did know that you thought I feel like you must have, because I feel like I already knew that you would judge my electric bike
Yeah.
decision
Look,
making.
so the character I play on the podcast hates electric bikes because the character I play in real life is annoyed out in the paths and byways here at the beach by electric bikes. And it's mostly by touristy people who've got these bikes that they never pedal. And then they go, it's just annoying. And so I have a deep personal hatred for electric bikes and everybody that rides them on the podcast, but I really don't. Look, if you want to have an electric bike, live your best life. But recently over at on Playhaven, myplayhaven.com, if you want to stop by, listener Harmony kind of called me out for being a dick and talking crap about. She did it very politely because she's like
She did.
she's like a good person, not like me.
Yeah.
And she's like talking about her electric bike that she got because she got a messed up knee, and so the pedal assist makes it easier for her to get out in the world and do stuff on her bike. And I think that's fucking awesome. Although if she passed me going up a hill, I'd still hate her. So
You'd be like, up yours.
but I do it with
Shaking your
all the
fist like a
yeah, I'd be
crazed old
grr.
man.
Because she Harmony would be going so fast, I would like fall over in her wake because there'd just be such a whoosh going by or whatever it is. So I hope you enjoy the bike, Harmony, and glad you're out there pedaling around. So how's your you getting a lot of use on your bike, Nicole?
I haven't, to be fair, because it's been summer and it's been a really hot summer. So I really haven't ridden my bike anywhere near as much as I'd like to, because every time I think about it, I break out into a sweat.
Sure.
So I think as it's cooling down, we're now in autumn, or as you Americans say, fall. We're in that season where the weather's changing, it's cooling down, and I think I'll get out and about on the bike. But I do have to pedal. I still have to pedal. So I don't go too fast. I don't go too fast because I'm afraid of going too fast. I always have these visions that I'm going to come flying off, or that I'm going to hit a rock on the path or something, and I'll be going too
Sure.
fast and I'll come flying off. So yeah, I max out at about 30 k's an hour.
That's a pretty good clip. Now, you can
That's
go online. You
downhill.
can dislabel disable that little bit of electronics that throttles it back.
No.
You could probably double that speed if you wanted to.
No, thank you.
I bet
No, thank
your
you.
husband could probably do it in like 20 minutes. He could probably disable
For
that for you.
sure.
Yeah. So look, be out there on your electric bikes. Enjoy them. I'm glad it's look it when I blow out my knee, I'm sure it's going to happen someday. First thing I'm going to do is get an electric bike. I
An
mean,
electric bike.
look, my hate for things runs really, really, really wide, but it's very, very
It's not
shallow.
deep.
It's
It's not
not.
deep.
I mean, last episode we were together, I talked about how much I hated the new dish soap container Tasha brought home, and that deep flaming hate is only millimeters deep. So yeah, there's that. What are we talking about in this episode?
I think we're talking about breakable stuff.
Yeah, this was something else that kind of popped into my mind over at Playhaven. Somebody posted about something, and then you told a story about something where there were toddlers throwing glass or what story?
I think the original post was about color mixing, and it was about children not being like expressly taught color mixing. And I think I was talking about how we used to use glass jars and the children could like go and fill up, like we had big bottles of paint with like a pump thing, and they could go and they could add like a little pump of blue and a little pump of yellow and whatever, and then mix their own color in like a baby food jar. And so they were just all recycled jars. And then often, like they come up with these inventive names for the colors, and you'd write it on a little piece of tape and you'd put their name on it, whatever, and they'd get left for next time. And so sometimes by the end of the week, you'd have like 45 jars with all these different shades of colors and whatever, but it was sustainable. They could come back to them. You'd put a little lid on them and they could come back to them. The paint didn't dry out. But I had a like a I don't know what you call it there, but like someone from like the licensing kind of body who came to visit and was like, I don't think you should have these glass jars. And I said, well, why not? And she's like, well, what if the children, this was in a preschool room, mind you, so you've got like 3 to 5 year olds, the children might pick them up and throw them across the room. And I'm like, one, why? Like, why would they do that? When they're using them for paint, like that's not the purpose, and they know that's not the purpose. And she's like, oh, but what if one just gets broken? What if it gets dropped and broken? And it's like, well, we clean it up. Like, it's not really a big deal. We clean it up and then we talk about it. And, you know, it's the same with anything breakable that we use. And so we eventually kind of got there. But yeah, just I think that was where that conversation came from around, you know, trusting children with breakable things. And, you know, I think unless you give children the opportunity to use breakable things, they don't understand the concept of breakable.
Yeah, I mean, the whole adaptive developmental domain, which is about learning how to navigate the world, how to adapt to the world, requires that if we want children to learn how to get along in the world, we've got to expose them to the
To the
world.
world.
And if the world has breakable things, we're doing kids a disservice to keep all breakable things out of their line of sight and reach. So I think here in the States, I very rarely have run into programs that have much breakable stuff in the programming space. But in Australia and somewhat in Canada, maybe see, I would label Australia would have the most programs I visit in Canada. I've seen some and very rarely seen it in the States. But what I've seen, the programs I visited in Australia were a very select group of programs that you and Tosh decided I should go visit. So there's kind of a self-selecting going on there. But those programs were very intentional, most of them, about having breakable things in the programming space for just that reason, to have that exposure so the kids could practice being careful.
Yeah, and they do need to be able to practice that. I think Alfie Cohen has like a quote about children learn to make decisions by making decisions. And I feel like it's the same thing with this. It's like children learn how to handle breakable things by handling breakable things. Like, you know, it's funny, we go to my mother-in-law's house one night a week for dinner, and she still gives my three children plastic cups, and they're 14. One turned 14 today. We've had a birthday today.
Happy
So he
birthday.
turned 14 today. Yeah. And the other two are like 11 and 9. Like they're not breaking shit. Like, and if they do, they're as likely to break it as I am. Like it's just, it will still happen, but it's just as likely that I'll break a glass. Like I just, that sort of, and you know, she said one day, she's like, oh, I don't know where the plastic cups are. I'm like, it really doesn't matter. They can use a proper glass. We use them at home. Like they're perfectly fine with real materials. They use knives. Like, you know, they'll be fine. But I think people struggle with letting go a little bit. And I don't know if some of it's that desire to keep children safe. We don't want them to break something and hurt themselves. And that can happen. You can break a glass and you might cut yourself, or you, I don't know, break whatever, a plate in the home corner and you might, you know, scratch yourself. Or, but that's a lesson. You're not going to die.
Yeah,
It
yeah.
might
I
hurt,
mean,
yeah, it might
look, I
bleed, but you're not going to
mean,
die.
statistically, death from a broken baby food
Broken
jar
glass.
or teacup is very, very unlikely. It could
It could
happen. I
happen.
mean, weird things happen, but it's very, 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 very
Very
unlikely.
unlikely.
And the way we learn to deal with those things is to experience them. You were talking about before we heated up the microphones and got started. You're talking about you recently had an experience involving the microwave at your house where something got broke.
Yeah.
And
And oh, it got broke. It was a giant catastrophe. So my 11-year-old decided to take her bowl of boiling hot noodles out of the microwave, but the microwave's above her head. She dropped the bowl because the bowl was too hot. It burnt her arm. It also smashed the bowl on the floor. We then, but funnily enough, I mean, there was water and noodles and stuff everywhere. Funnily enough, though, like my 14-year-old and 9-year-old snapped into action. They put the dog out because the dog was in the house and they were worried the dog was going to stand on some of the broken stuff. I was like, well, maybe he could have cleaned up the noodles, but still. So they put the dog out, and then my 14-year-old's like, where's the dustpan and brush? I'll start to clean up the, bits of broken ceramic from the bowl and whatever. And I'm like, I was not worried about that in the slightest. I was more worried about the child. I think, like we talked about in the last
Yeah.
episode, focus on the child's injury first, then we'll fix up the other part. But, like that doesn't mean that I now wouldn't use like breakable bowls for her, or that, and even that I wouldn't let her use the microwave. Like I still would. She just said afterwards, she's like, I'm never eating noodles again. And it's like, okay, fair. It's not really the noodles problem, but I'm like, maybe. And she's like, next time I'll let you get it out for me, because I always say, I'll get it out. I'll get it out of the microwave because it is up high. And this time she beat me to it. She thought she could do it herself. And, unfortunately, she could not. But, it wasn't the end of the world. It wasn't a great outcome, but it wasn't the end of the world. And there's definitely a lesson in it.
Yeah, and it sounded like the three of them have met broken things before because they and
Absolutely.
it sounds like they knew exactly how to deal with it.
Yeah,
And
absolutely. It was like, all right, let's get into action. Let's fix this problem. And, it's not panic stations. Like, I don't know. I've never, it was like even when my kids were really little and we'd go to my mum's house, and my mum never kept breakable things down low. And she'd still have them out, but she'd have them up high, like special things, So if she had like a special vase or whatever, they got put up high. And, she said something one day and she said, it's not that I don't trust them, but she said, I would be upset if that thing broke. She
yeah.
said, there's other things that I don't care if they break. Like they're not a big deal. It's, a $2 glass from, just a basic shop. And like it's not special. And I think that's the thing. If we have things in our early childhood environments that are breakable, then we can get them from secondhand stores, we can get them donated, and we don't have that kind of financial or emotional attachment to the thing. So if the thing gets broken, we can be like, well, that's disappointing, but we can replace it. And, there's a lesson learned and there's value in that lesson. Whereas if we have something down, and I had made the mistake of having a vase that was given to me by my grandmother, and it was down low and it did get broken. And I was devastated when it happened, but I wasn't mad at the children for breaking it, because I'm like, well,
Yeah.
it was in a spot where it could have easily gotten broken. And because they were, I can't even remember which children, it was two of them, and I think they were doing something probably pretty silly, but they were like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, look, I'm disappointed and I'm upset about it, but I'm not mad about it, because that I made that choice to have that thing
Yeah.
available. And, I think that's, it's all about mindset, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, back in our family childcare days, we had stuff accessible to the kids that was breakable, jars and things like we've talked about. But then up high, I had my glass jars full of dead things, because having a jar full of paint broken, that's a mess to clean up. But having a jar full of squirrel
Dead
preserved in
bat.
alcohol could, I mean, that's just a mess you don't want to deal with, because first, it's hard to find another squirrel to put in a jar. But second, it's just not a smell I wanted to deal with. And so you keep those precious treasures away. It's kind of like books we talked about.
Yeah.
In the last episode we were together, having kid accessible books and then having a collection of your more precious books that are out of reach. It's kind of the same thing. And look, imagine your 14-year-old growing up without having the opportunity to engage with anything breakable and then having something get broken. It's panic stations and it's how do I mean, but because
what do
he's,
I do? Yeah.
Because he's had those experiences, he was able to kind of be the take on the big brother role right there and say, okay, look at this. And the dog goes out and so what should really, the protocol for that should be the dog goes out, glass gets cleaned up, dog comes back, cleans up the noodles. And then just wipe up the floor. That's the order I do it in. It probably
would have been ideal, but I was a little preoccupied with a burnt child. So whatever. But yeah, afterwards we actually all did joke about that. We were like, oh, we really needed the dog to clean up the noodles.
Oh, years ago, I talked about this on the podcast. I was coming home. Lisa Murphy was coming for a visit, and I'd been to the liquor store, of course, and I got a bottle of tequila, a nice bottle of Patron, and so I'm unloading. I open up the back of the truck, and the box tips out and falls into the driveway, and shatters, I was so heartbroken. I wanted to get down and just
come and lick it up,
just lick it up out of the concrete before it soaked in. So I mean, the accidents happen, but I cleaned it up and wept a little bit, shed some tears, but those experiences are good for us. That's part of the learning process. And look, some pushback I've heard about this before is like, Jeff, those are experiences they can get at home.
Sometimes, and sometimes not.
And I think that's part of our job, is to make sure they get the experiences they need. And this can be done safely in early learning programs, because there are lots of early learning programs that are doing it. And
it's a safe place to do it. It's probably even safer, because we typically have more adults, less, and you know, compared to what you might have at home. Like for me, even at home the other day, dealing with that situation, it was just me, and you know, I didn't have any other adult to, you know, deal with the broken stuff, move the children away or whatever. Like, you know, whereas in a lot of, you know, depending on the type of care context you're in, but you might have multiple adults, and so you've got a little bit more flexibility. You've also got people who are trained in first aid usually, so you know, you've got people who know what to do if a child does actually cut themselves with something or whatever. You know what to do, so I think you're probably better placed than at home for dealing with those breakable sort of situations.
I think you're spot on with that too. We're just more prepared because let's face it, in early learning programs, I hope, at least the listeners of this show, there's a lot more thought put into the environment and what's in the environment than there is a lot of times at home. Even for caregivers, the thought we put into our work environment might be more stringent than what we put into at home. And so I would totally agree that those are probably safer environments. I'd also point out that, look, if you got an environment where you have breakable stuff and you have nothing that kids can throw, you're increasing the chance that something breakable is going to get thrown. If you've got an environment that has breakable stuff and you have lots of stuff that can be thrown around and experimented with kids exploring trajectory and things like that, it's less likely the breakable stuff is going to be get thrown, because they've got the stuff that they know is throwable, and they realize, I mean, most kids most of the time can wrap their heads around, this is breakable and I shouldn't break it. I mean, most kids can handle
that. And they learn that pretty early. Like they really do learn that pretty early.
That's been my experience. And look, everybody that I've met that has a program with that kind of stuff accessible to the kids, I ask, when was the first, when I saw your post, the first thing I asked was how many kids had been turned into bloody
Yeah, that's
corpses
right.
or something along
And
those lines.
it just didn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen. And it's all about how we introduce breakable things to children too. Like,
Sure.
you know, if I decide I've never had glass jars for my paints, and one day I decide I'm going to introduce glass jars, and I just go and whack them in the paint area where previously there were plastic pots, and I say nothing, and you know, there's no kind of instruction or there's no communication with children about what those things are and why they're there and how we take care of them, then is it any wonder if they get broken? Like, it's about that introduction to breakable materials too. And I think it's the same if you bring in something that's special into your environment, whether it's, I don't know, like a nice vase or, you know, whatever, but to actually show it to children. Maybe it's like a beautiful teapot for in the home corner or whatever, but to actually show it to them and say, you know, have a look at this and have a feel of it. And what do you think might happen if we dropped it on the floor? Or, you know, how do you think we could look after it? And what are some of the things that we could do to keep this thing safe? You know, it's a special thing. Maybe somebody donated it to us and, you know, it's a special thing. How do we look after it? And I think unless we do that kind of prep work with children, then once again, we're setting them up to fail. You know, we're giving them the, here's the material. I didn't tell you what to do with it. It's like giving children testers for the first time and not showing them that if you push too hard, the ends will get smushed in. And then being shocked when the ends are all smushed in. You know, like it's the same sort of thing. Like you've got to prepare children so that they have that concept and that understanding that, yeah, this thing is breakable. And, you know, and also talk to them about what happens if we break it so that if it does get broken, it's not just that the child kicks it under the table and thinks, oh, let's not worry about that. I might get in trouble. But they know to say, oh, this thing just got broken. We need to clean it up. You know, like it's all about that communication, I think, with children.
And setting up those protocols. Okay, this is breakable stuff. We're going to try not to break it. If it gets broken, here's how we're
Here's
going
what
to
we
handle
do.
it. And most kids from some pretty early ages are able to handle that. And then beyond that, I think that stuff is having the breakables in the classroom is valuable because when something does get broken, they get to have that experience of dealing with it. Even if that involves an injury, a scratch or a scrape or a cut. Because that's also part of the human experience we have to learn how to work our way through. And if you don't have, if you don't cut your knee or your finger once in a while when you're little, all the other hard things in life are much more difficult.
Absolutely.
We worry about being able to survive things because I've met kids, they get a little cut and they're worried all their blood is going to come out. And it's just the tiniest little paper. I mean, it could be a paper cut and it might feel that way
Barely
if that's the
even
first,
bleeding.
yeah. And it might feel that way if that's the first time you've ever been cut. But when you can realize that, okay, we apply some pressure and we clean it up and it's probably already
It
stopped
will
bleeding by
stop.
itself, but okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. We'll put a Band-Aid on it and we'll check that in a little bit. And 45 minutes later, you take the Band-Aid off and you say, okay, the bleeding has stopped. The rest of your blood, you still got plenty of blood left inside. Everything's going to be okay. That kind of shows that you're able to work through things that aren't perfect in life, and that kind of resilience and ability to survive is again another part of the human experience that's pretty valuable. And I'm not suggesting we should go around intentionally making children bleed.
We're just breaking stuff.
But when it happens, we've got to realize that that's part of the learning experience. That's valuable. That's valuable classroom time. It's not an emergency to deal with. It's a learning experience that everybody involved gets to have together because not only the kid that gets hurt, the kids that are helping clean up the mess, the kids that are patting that kid on the shoulder and telling her it's going to be okay, and the care they get to take on that role of caretaker, all of that is part of that human experience that's so
Yeah, it's all
valuable there.
valuable.
So, have we talked this one to death?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. I
Hey,
don't know. Until
listeners.
next time.
Listeners, back at episode 801, that's over 300 episodes ago, episode called Breakable Classroom Stuff. I talked to Carol and Sam about this topic, but I figured, 300 episodes, it's time to revisit it. And I'm sure we covered a lot of the same ground, but probably covered it a little bit differently. And I know a lot of pro like you mentioned a licensure. A lot of people don't want to try the breakable stuff because they're just worried about the licensure from the beginning. My recommendation is read the regulations, find out exactly what they say, and then ask questions, because there are very few that I've actually seen that totally ban the breakable stuff. And recently I can't even remember who or where or how, but somebody was, I think it was somebody that one of my trainings was concerned about this. And I, well, the state doesn't allow it. And like, show me what page it is on.
Where?
And they did. And I said, well, that's kind of not clear here. And I
A bit
emailed the licensing
ambiguous.
people. And I reached out to the licensing people and told them the situation. I'm like, oh no, if they're doing this and this and this, that can be okay. And it's basically taking some procedures, like you've thought out how you're going to respond if something gets broken, and that you're doing this as an intentional thing. Most
Well, it's
licensing
risk
people,
assessment, isn't it?
you do that benefit risk assessment before you bring the stuff, and you look for the hazards, and maybe you're putting some breakable teacups in the dramatic play area, and maybe one of the things you do, you've got a tile floor, maybe you decide you're going to put a rug down there, so it's gonna maybe break the fall of things when something does fall. There's little steps you can take. But I mean, my experience is mostly the licensing people want kids to have developmentally appropriate process experiences, but they might need help working through it as well. So we can help along with that. Let's wrap this up. Any final thoughts?
Nope, I think that's it. Oh, I did
Hey.
have actually, I met someone the other day who
Oh.
you visited while you were here in Australia, and he had nothing but good things to say about you. And that's going back such a long time. He said you should come back. I said
Huh.
you didn't want to get on a plane anymore.
Yeah, I don't mind getting on planes. I just don't like to go to airports. So if I could get on
Yeah, well, that's
planes
a
without
bit
having,
tricky.
that's really, really kind of tricky.
Of
Well, tell him I said, hey, that's nice to hear. It
course, nice.
almost maybe have a feeling.
Oh.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast that wants you to play with breakable stuff. Have a good day, night. I don't know when you're listening, but enjoy it. Back soon. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Did we get done in time for you to get to your thing?
Did it? Yeah, we did really well.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.